I gotta tell you how great the people are who support Radio Labyrinth. These are the producers of the show. These are the people that put it together every single week, okay? So let's start with Jason Chappell. Jason Chappell, thank you very, very much. Also, Mike Hall, Sean Hall, Chad Shepard, Al McKeon, Mike Spittler, Andrew Hopkins, Jonathan Wilson, Keith Tate, Brian Smith, Steve Knutson, Melissa Knowles, Leslie Norman, John Sutherland, Garrett Kemble, Mike D, Eric Malmstrom, Matt Carter, and Beth Van Elswick. I know that each and every one of those people who donates to Radio Labyrinth can afford to donate to Bernie Sanders. So go to BernieSandersForPresident.com /donate. I promise I'll pay my people $15 an hour, but I'm not paying any overtime. If you'd like to be a Radio Labyrinth producer or supporter, go to www.patreon.com/TimAndrews, and thank you.
Just stay calm. No, it's okay.
It's fine.
Just relax. Just relax.
This tunnel is very narrow. How are they going to get to you? How low has it been?
It's fine. Just relax. Just relax.
They're coming. Someone is coming for you.
Dr. Demento request line. Hello?
Hello, Dr. Demento. I'm Tim Andrews, and I listen to you on 94 Rock WOVY, and live in Mansfield, PA. I want you to play It's Sister Jenny's Time to Build Up. Bomb! Good explosion there, you know.
I'm an old chemist. Addict.
The retrospective he did, because he's doing a regular guy's podcast.
Right, that idea was born on our
yeah,
podcast.
Yeah, Autumn gave it to him. And, oh, hey, everybody, welcome to episode, what is this, Jeff? You do it. I can't ever read
33.
It right.
33, season 4, episode 33.
We used to do it numerically, Mason. By the way, our guest today is Mason Ray. He is an amateur film, no, not an amateur filmmaker. You're a filmmaker.
Professional
filmmaker.
Technically, right.
You're
now
a filmmaker.
Yeah, I'm a filmmaker now. Yeah,
I mean, once you've made a film, you go beyond the amateur, correct?
Yes. Yes, that's excluding personal films that I've made.
Right.
Yes, yeah. Yes. I'm sure we've all made those.
The stuff on Pornhub.
Yeah.
It doesn't count.
Pornhub. Do you have a Pornhub channel?
We're going to let it all hang out.
Hey, so we'll get back with you in a second, but what was I saying? Oh, I don't even remember. See, I've had a long day. I've been tired.
We were talking about Larry.
Oh, yeah. Larry's a new podcast. It's been around for a couple of months now. It's the Regular Guy's Review, and he has the most recent episode, I guess, if you go there now and look it up, is the most disgusting and shocking moments. And then last week was Tim Andrews. It was all me. But let me tell you about the show. You know, he put so much effort into this. We spoke on the phone for an hour. He interviewed me on the phone, talked about the bits that I liked and stuff, condensed all that into half an hour. He cuts up all the old bits and he puts transitional elements in it. It's one of the best podcasts out there as far as content and layout together, because you know there's podcasts with a lot of content that are terrible, and then there's podcasts that don't have any content and a lot of great production value that suck. This is not either of those. It's really good. So if you're a fan of the Regular Guys, which I'm sure most of the people listening to this podcast probably are or were, check it out. Not just because of the great episode that I'm on highlighting my comedic genius throughout the year. Hey, don't forget, guys, we are a week away from Radio Labyrinth live podcast recording with special guests. It is Friday, August 30th, Labor Day weekend, 8 p.m. Relapse Theater on 14th Street in Midtown. Now, listen, Midtown frightening you? Don't let it frighten you. There's plenty of parking there. They have people to help you park, and it's a very affordable event. It's $20 will get you and a guest in now.
Right.
And you know, just hit us up. Let us know that you want to come. Talk to me or Jeff or even Steph. We'll all be there. Autumn will be there. We also have Joe Galwa, who'll be there as a guest. We have
Josh Warren.
Josh Warren, who's extremely funny.
Larrabee is going to try to come. She says she wanted to.
Yeah?
I don't know if she's going to bring her husband or not, but
I'd like both of them to come
and
if they can make it.
Joe Pettis said he thinks he can make it for a little bit. And yeah. We're trying to get Ming to come over from Dragon Con.
And it'll be a typical show. We'll be doing the panel thing where we talk about all the shit that we like. Plus, we are also going to do a What We're Watching show next week with me, Jeff, and Steph, because there's so much TV to talk about. This week, we won't be doing a lot of TV talk because we have a couple of guests, including Mason, who you've already heard. I spoke to author Tom O'Neill and did a nice phoner with him about a half hour, and that's on this show, talking about his latest book, Chaos, Charles Manson, the CIA, and the Secret History of the 60s, a book that I devoured in less than 3 days. Just because.
Did he see the movie, the Quentin Tarantino movie?
He did see the movie, and he talks about his thoughts on that and the ending of the movie, not to spoil it. He talks about Vincent Bugliosi and his relationship with him. Doesn't really reveal anything. You know, an author's not going to tell you the deep, dark secrets that are hidden in the book. But if you know anything about the Manson murders or you follow that kind of thing, now there are three things to me that make it canon. This book, and there's a podcast called You Must Remember This about Old Hollywood, which is done by Karina Longworth. Another very well-produced podcast with good content. She did, I think, a 12-part series, The History of Charles Manson in Hollywood. And it's fascinating to think that all these people, all these famous people that you know, were intertwined with him and the girls, especially the girls. You know, the Beach Boys, Terry Melcher, all banging these girls riddled with VD. And once Manson got arrested and they all got arrested and put in jail, they all forgot.
Yeah.
Especially Terry Melcher. And who, you know, if you don't know who that was, he was a music producer. He did the Beach Boys, among other people, Buffalo Springfield, all sorts of bands, Doris Day's son, and also was dating Candace Bergen, and lived at that house at Cielo Drive, where Manson eventually ended up sending his crew to, allegedly. So anyway, check that book out. And, you know, if you're like me, get into the Manson stuff. Are you into Charles Manson, Mason?
You know, I was when I was much younger, and it just kind of... There wasn't a whole lot of media on it at the time.
No.
So it kind of petered out. I've always been a Dahmer guy.
You're a Dahmer guy. Yeah. You'd like to see more Dahmer shit,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You like the cannibals.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the real juicy stuff. Yeah.
About the guy that, there was a comedian, I don't remember who it was, the guy escaped from his house and the police brought him back. Do you remember who that was?
No.
It was very funny. I don't remember who the comedian was, but he escaped from Dahmer's place, and the police brought him back, and then he ended up being in that tub.
Jesus.
So, yeah, I don't know. The Manson thing appeals to me because it's conspiratorial, and it involves the CIA and MKUltra and all that, all those trigger words for conspiracy nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
MKUltra.
Chemtrails.
Monarch. Yeah. Programming.
Chemicals are turning our frogs gay.
That's right. So Mason Ray was a Regular Guys intern. What years were you an intern at the Regular Guys show?
I think, I want to say 13, 14 and a half, somewhere in there.
Around that time?
Yeah, 2013, 2014, around there. Right before Eric, it was the whole cast, the Southside, you and everybody was there still.
Yeah.
So it was
sure, Vinny Bucci was there.
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, yeah.
Unfortunately. I like Vinny Bucci. People either love or hate him, I guess.
He's a nice guy, but I just got so tired of that bit.
What bit?
Just having him.
The whole.
Yeah. It was Bucci. At the peak when Larry wanted him on every other day, and it was just okay, you're running this into the ground.
Yeah. I get what he was doing, though. I think he did that on purpose.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, he was trying to do the whack pack of...
No. It was more than the whack pack. It was more like, what's the name of that movie that Bobcat did with Steve Buscemi, where the whole movie is like a joke on one dude.
Oh, yeah.
Living in Oblivion?
No, it was something about Southside or something.
No, I think it's Living in Oblivion.
No, I'm not familiar.
But anyway, it was more performance art than, you
Windy
know,
City Heat.
Windy City Heat.
Oh, yeah,
is a fantastic movie.
Yeah, I remember Larry talking about that movie. So.
Right, so if you think of it in that context.
Yeah, everything is a big joke around him to build him up.
So the interns from that run of the Regular Guys show, yourself, now that you're a filmmaker, we have another intern who's running for state senate in Roswell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And her name is Sarah. I can't say her last.
It used to be Zibanejad Rod.
Zibanejad Rod?
Yeah. We dated.
Oh, you dated
we
her?
We dated in high school.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I liked her so much. I I memorized how to spell her name.
Well, that's not her name anymore. It's Beeson, B-E-E-S-O-N. And I don't care what her politics is. She was a former intern, so
yeah, she's a
Sarah.
Yeah, she's a genuinely good person.
Yeah,
like that. I think
she is.
Yeah, we get so hung up nowadays on the bipartisanship of left and right, and we forget the people behind it.
Right.
And Sarah's like just a genuinely good person.
Right. Even if she is a leftist.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah.
Even if she has a hammer and sickle flag in her
car.
She's
Iranian. How dare she be? Her cousin played professional hockey, and I don't know if he still is, but he was the first Iranian Iranian hockey player to play in the NHL, I believe.
That sounds like the premise of a really good comedy.
Yeah.
I'm the first Iranian hockey player. Will Ferrell stars.
Who else we have? We have
David Mogadon.
David, he's now an engineer building roller coasters all over the world, right?
Yeah, he's amazing. Like he's got he's my hero because he, like, when we were interns, he was like, all I want to do is build roller coasters.
Yeah.
And he was going to school for engineering.
Right.
He started his own Kickstarter for roller coasters to design his own.
And he gets a 3D printer, right?
Yeah, 3D printer and a mill and everything. And then he gets a roller coaster job. It was kind of an amusement park job. And then he gets pulled up to the big leagues. And now he's all over. I think he's in like Sri Lanka now.
I know. I follow him on Instagram.
Yeah.
Then we have another intern, Chrissy.
Yeah.
Chrissy Warlow, who ended up being a weather person in Huntsville, Alabama. She's a TV meteorologist.
No, really?
Yeah. And then there's others who didn't quite make it.
those that died. Yeah. We lost on the way.
Yeah. But no, we had a good crew there.
A Playboy bunny intern?
No, we didn't. No. No,
she was an intern. No, back 96, in the early
96 Rock era. She wasn't an intern as far as I know. Maybe she was for their show, but she ended up being on the Bod Squad,
right.
Which was the
that's what it was. Bod Squad.
The Bod Squad was a group of allegedly hot women who would wear I mean, not all of them were. Most of them were. Some of them weren't. But there were a girl troupe that you took out to events. Hey, the Bod Squad's there.
Okay. All right.
And she ended up doing, she was Miss September, I think, 2005, where Jose Canseco's ex-wife is on the cover. Right? But she was. She was Miss September, I believe. And
do you take any credit for that?
Yeah, because I met the photographer who worked for Playboy at the Cheetah when I was there doing because I was promotions director.
Yeah.
So I was meeting with people down there, and the Cheetah photographer said, you know, I take photos for Playboy if you know anybody. So I gave her the card. I didn't
get out.
No, I said, here, you know, if you're ever interested. And that's you know, I didn't get any credit for it, but that's
keep your daughters away from Tim, ladies.
Now I would never broach that topic with any woman because I'm married.
Because there's no nudity in Playboy anymore.
Well, yeah.
Well,
you'd look good if you had your own My Free Cam site.
Cam Soda, come on now.
Cam Soda. So you know the.
Oh, man, I'm a complete deviant.
What's your favorite cam site?
Chatterbait.
You know, I'm not a fan of camming.
What?
Chatterbait. Yeah. Omegle.
Oh, you like it. So just random. You don't know. You want a guy's dick in your face.
Well, I mean, who doesn't when you really get down to it?
I don't think, do they still do that at Omegle?
Yeah.
Gone there in a while.
I haven't been on there since they made it so you can't play the people's cams back to them. We used to have so much fun doing that.
Not Chatterbait. What was the first one?
It was Omegle, right?
No, there's one before that.
Chat Roulette.
Yes. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, Chat Roulette. Yeah.
Jeff and I would spend hours in our own rooms.
It's still there, right? It's still around. You still do it.
Creating macros people.
They fixed it so you can't do it anymore. You could set up a where you record their screen and play it back to them as your screen.
Yeah.
And then you could move in like little pictures of dildos and shit.
Yeah.
I'd fuck with the people in the picture, put boobs on them and stuff.
I have a whole bunch of screen grabs of stuff that I used to do to people. I would capture.
Are you capturing like horrible videos?
No,
like,
no, hang on. Let me tell you I would capture girls on a regular chat site. There was one called UCam or something, which there was no nudity there. There were just girls and guys, you know, talking. And I would record a little bit of that. And then, you know, you'd find a guy on Chat Roulette. Be like, hey, how you doing? And then I'd get the guys would, you know, talk to the girl. And then I'd switch it immediately to a guy shitting on a plate. Or another guy scooping it out of the toilet.
Two girls, one cup in it.
Yeah, you know, this is grosser than that.
Oh, really?
I can even describe it.
Yeah.
And then I started doing weird things. Like there's one video of me shirtless in my bed eating peanut. I took peanut butter, put it all over my stomach, and I'm scooping it with crackers.
And the ideal way to eat peanut butter.
Yeah, so. But we're not here to talk about chat websites and nude cams and things like that. Cam Soda, never check that one out.
Cam Soda is, you know, I'm not a big, I don't like paying for it. You know what I mean? There's a fakeness to it where it's like everything is, you know.
Yeah. Hey.
Yeah.
Tip if you want to talk to me.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I'd rather see people like amateur on Pornhub where it's like, they're just people who just love to go at it and they're willing to share it with the world.
Have you gone to Jerkmate yet?
Jerkmate? No.
Jerkmate.
What's that?
It's a cam site called Jerkmate.
Jerkmate.
Yeah.
The ingenuity of these names is
you got a bait buddy?
A bait buddy.
This is what happens when the females are on the show. Jeff, do you have a bait buddy?
A bait
buddy?
No.
What?
I refuse.
You don't have a bait buddy? No. Yeah, I don't either. Not anymore. I got married and my wife said, no more bait buddies.
No more bait.
It's just a couple straight dudes sitting around watching each other jack off.
There ain't nothing gay about that.
No, not at all. No, hey.
It's only gay if they touch, you know?
Even then.
Even then?
Even then.
Oh, yeah, you got to say no homo first.
I decide what is gay.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, no homo.
Yeah, just do no homo before it.
Mason.
Yes, sir.
Okay, back up a little bit. Mason made a movie, and the movie is called...
Lamplight.
Not Kudzu. It's called Lamplight. And you had it at the Atlanta Film Festival 2018?
2018, yeah.
All right.
It took about a year to get distribution and all of that paperwork came out. So
basically, tell us the premise of the movie and how you got into making it and what inspired you to make it.
Well, Lamplight is a story of a man who is essentially hit an extreme rough patch in his life. And then, one day while driving, he's stuck in a tunnel collapse. And a lot of Lamplight it turns into a survival film, but it's also like about mental survival, about pushing through past trauma and trying to just survive your own demons while also surviving external demons like being crushed by a mountain.
So it's a way to finally confront all the shit, the baggage and shit in your head because you're stuck there.
Exactly. It's exactly. You have nowhere to go. So the main character, Don Goss, is used to just running from his problems.
And you're playing the main character.
Yeah, unfortunately. Cause
why is that unfortunate?
Because it took me 5 years to make.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably would have taken 2 months to make with a proper crew and a proper budget. But
you paid for this idea.
I did because Craig Brewer, while I was in school, Craig Brewer, who did Hustle and Flow, he does Empire.
Mm-hmm.
He gave a talk and he gave us all his personal emails. He was a really sweet, awesome guy when I was in school. And he came to talk to us and he said, listen, there's two ways to go about this. You either... bump and grind your way through being a PA or whatever, or you just get out there and you just do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know what? I hate begging and I hate sucking, being an intern kind of sucking up and begging and trying to get people to notice you. It's like, I'm just going to do it. Screw it. And I don't want to have to rely on anybody else. And I have a day job. I have to pay for this myself. So I'll just do it at night, but I can't really ask anybody to come. Hey, it's 11 o'clock. Let's work till 3 a.m.
Right.
X, Y, and Z time. And it's like, I don't have a lot to pay you, by the way. I could do that, but you know, you're not going to get the quality you want. So I just said, you know what? Screw it. I'll do everything. I'll do every single thing. And then I did lights, camera, everything. And then I only have to rely on myself to show up and I can shoot on my own time and I can pretend to be an actor.
Right.
Because if you can do 20 takes of something.
Mm-hmm. Then you're an actor.
There's one take in there where you accidentally did the line right.
I know.
And you can edit that in. That's the beauty of film. So I look like an actor.
Did you shoot it on film or did you shoot on video?
No, I shot it on video. At the time, I'm so envious of people right now because this was when I started. It was 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so envious because the cameras now are just, there's light years ahead of what
I had. So you were making this while you were an intern?
I started writing it when I was an intern.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It took almost a year to write. And then, because I had to write for my limitations.
Right.
I had to write for the whole situation. So that was a big problem. But you run into the fact of who wants to look at this face? I was telling Jeff this. Who wants to look at this face for 90 minutes?
Yeah.
So it was like, the biggest advice I'd give anyone on doing any kind of big endeavor is this, is be your harshest critic.
Oh, they got all these survival shows now, too, that...
Mm-hmm.
The people like, you know, the extremists and the preppers and all that have become pretty big.
Yeah, it's I had to you rack your brain, like, how do I make this interesting?
Right.
Because it can't just be me moping around in a car for 90 minutes. You have to add flavor and intrigue.
People can find the trailer.
How long is the guy stuck in the car? Do we
90 minutes, you just said.
Yeah, no, but 90 whole minutes.
Well, in the movie, it's 90 minutes. How long is it?
I leave it ambiguous. There's a large jump in time in the film where I lost 45 pounds in real life. I lost 45 pounds to indicate this big jump in time. And it was purely because of, I had to lose it. So I spent 2 months essentially starving myself because I had time crunch towards the end of the film. So I left it ambiguous. I don't want to tell you.
Right.
I left it ambiguous because if you start saying that, then you get people coming out of the woodwork doing the math.
Yeah.
I've already had it happen, and I intentionally left everything ambiguous.
Right.
I've already, because I did an AMA on Reddit. I got to the front page of Reddit, which was super awesome.
That's pretty cool. How many responses does something like that get?
I think I ended up with like around 6,000 upvotes.
Wow.
And I answered 150 questions, and I answered around 150 questions. I answered every single one. I spent 14 hours answering. Because it was like, if I'm privileged enough to make this break, I'm going to make sure that nobody walks away. I got so many compliments from people saying, I can't believe you're answering all these questions. Usually somebody wanders in, answers like
this. Was this just based on the trailer or the film?
Just the trailer.
Wow.
And it was, I think, most of the questions I got were really, it was actually more touching than I ever anticipated, because a lot of the questions that I got were related to people who wanted to follow their dreams, who and never had the chutzpah or the money or the means, or they tried and they failed and they gave up or whatever. And it was like people who were like, man, it's nice seeing somebody just try and get there.
Yeah.
And it was super, like, I was like, wow. And I tried to be really supportive of those people. It's like, hey, man, you know, or dude, it's life's short. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, who knows what's going to lead. You know, I try to be supportive to these people.
Cause I got a buddy, he's over 50. He just moved to, or maybe just 50, but he just pulled up stakes, moved to California.
Yeah. It's like,
having a good time, it looks like, on Instagram.
Yeah. And like, a lot of them was like, yeah, I'm 27. And it's like, oh, life is, you know, I have to give up on my dreams. It was like, Rodney Dangerfield was 40, like 7 years old before he made it. Alan Rickman was like 48.
Really?
He was 48 Die Hard. That was his first real film. And it's
when he played Bill Clay.
And it's like, you never know, you know what I mean? If you want it bad enough.
How much did you end up spending to make the movie?
Hey guys, here's another one of Radio Labyrinth's awesome sponsors, Bailey Tree Care LLC in Gainesville, Georgia. You can contact Nick Bailey at 770-530-9421 or Jason Chappell at 404-234-2599. Bailey Tree Care. They are Northeast Georgia's premier choice for high-quality tree care services at affordable prices. Their tree care experts bring an excellent safety record and over 10 years of experience in the industry. Bailey Tree Care specializes in residential products and offers free estimates for all your tree service needs. Residential tree care, certified arborists and tree climber, tree trimming and pruning, tree removal, stump grinding and removal, shrub trimming, pruning, underbrush clearing, and mulch and firewood sale. Safety, professionalism, and affordability. Call them today to discuss your tree care need. That's Bailey Tree Care LLC.
Hey there, radios. This is Dean, a.k.a. Rockdale Tiger, inviting you to listen to this week's episode of Mike TV as we recap the final season of AMC's Preacher. This week, Radio Labyrinth's own Stephanie Swain joins Lisa and I as we discuss glory hole etiquette, a very likable Hitler, and how to survive at sea when God hates you. All of this and more on this week's episode of Mike TV, and don't forget to catch new episodes of Preacher every Sunday night at 10 on AMC.
So I took a $10,000 loan against a car, and half of that went to a computer that could build, that could edit, at the time, a whopping 2K of raw footage. Back in my day.
Back in my day, my Mac couldn't process as fast as yours.
It was, and right now, like, you could edit 2K on your phone.
Right.
So, so half of that was just the budget for the computer,
stuff,
you know, and, you can make lamplight now easily.
You can make it on the phone probably.
You could. Well, the problem was, the biggest problem with lamplight was that it was, I had wanted to make it believable that you were in a car.
Right.
And you were stuck. So that meant super limited light.
So the audience is in the car with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And it was very much, there's not a lot of camera movement for two reasons. One, I wanted it to feel isolating. I wanted it to feel claustrophobic. I didn't want moving around the car. And also because it was just me. So
yeah.
I had a little dolly rig, a remote control dolly rig that I built. But it was like, no, I want to make this claustrophobic.
Why do you change your clothes so much?
It's showing over time. It's passion.
Oh, okay.
In the car, I never change my clothes.
I'm looking at it, though, in the trailer.
Well, he was wearing a sweatshirt when
I got a hoodie over.
Yeah. Hey, I don't understand. Yeah. I don't get layers.
Already.
How soon before he has to start drinking his piss? That's what I'm
I never address. Actually, I address it once. There's a scene where I have to eat a worm. And
Where'd you find the worm?
It's a collapsed tunnel.
It crawled in the window.
Did you eat it in real life?
Well, no, I cut right before. I don't want to ruin this. But I was willing to do that, but how I use the worm later, won't spoil it. How I use the worm later, I think, is more satisfying than seeing each other.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So
all right. He's your friend.
Yeah.
Wilson.
There's a musical number. We have a duet.
Sweet.
My honey. Hello, my baby.
Yeah. Have you submitted it to any other film festivals?
It premiered at the Atlanta Film Festival. From there, I got distribution and headed straight to that.
Okay.
And right now, it's on all the majors: Amazon, YouTube, iTunes.
Really?
Yeah. It's out, and from what I understand, it's been doing okay.
Yeah. Have you recouped yet?
That Reddit AMA. Well, royalties work. Every royalties plan is different.
Yeah.
But for mine, it's pretty standard. It's like in a 3-month interval.
So they don't pay to put it on. They just put it on and then you get royalties.
Yeah, you get royalties.
Okay.
From it. Those days are kind of gone unless you're a big budget and you want that up front. But like for independent films, nobody.
Like Scorsese, who's releasing his next film on Netflix, they probably gave him a little bit of money.
Like a cup of coffee.
Thank you very much.
But now that you've done it once, you've got the door open. Right?
Yeah. So
that was the idea. I never made Lamplight to make money.
No.
That was never it was simply, hey, this is what I can do with 10 grand.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine what I could do with a real budget.
Right.
And that's why I was super critical. That's why it took 5 years. I could have pumped that out in a year.
Yeah, if you wanted it to be, hack.
Yeah, but I cut at least a third of the film when I realized it wasn't up to snuff, and I had to redo portions of it because I was once again my own harshest critic. I said, now, it just wasn't enough.
You're married, right?
Yes, indeed.
And how did your wife handle you not being around? Because didn't you guys just have a child in the last couple years?
Yeah. I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old.
Okay, so you've had two.
Yeah, I had two while the film was being born. While the film was being made, my daughter was born. Yeah.
So it's like, I can't change diapers tonight, honey. I got to sit in a car.
I was fortunate enough that all my kids were pretty good sleepers.
Okay,
we were pretty militaristic about it. So they were pretty good sleepers. Now, she was extremely supportive, and I did it mostly at night. So it was, it was like filming at 10 a.m. in the garage.
Okay.
And I had to use real rocks because they're far cheaper than fake rocks.
Real rocks.
So, yeah.
You had a bunch of boulders to come to your home.
I had 3,000 pounds of real concrete and rebar on homemade movable dollies.
Nice.
And industrial grade. My producer, my assistant producer, essentially my getter, goes by the name of Nathan Goss. He was a big help. He's also a big fan of yours.
Hi, Nathan.
Oh, yeah. he just ejaculated when you said his name all over the place.
Edging this entire podcast.
The entire time.
28 minutes he's edged. It's not long enough to goon. Jeff knows all about gooning. He was telling me about this crazy thing going on gooning.
This is you and your 4chan buddies.
I don't know what you're talking about. Anyways.
I've given up on 4chan.
You have? Why?
Yeah, because,
well, 4chan B is all porn now.
Yeah.
And it didn't used to be.
Well, the thing is, you can get... everyone on 4chan is going to dox me now for what I'm about to say.
Okay,
but
go ahead.
Everything good about 4chan is on the 4chan subreddit.
Yeah.
Because it's like you don't have to deal with the horrors.
Yeah.
Of you can see all the
tribute thread.
Yeah.
And only if you go to 4chan do you know what that means.
Only traps.
Yeah. B used to be trolling and not doxing, but trolling people and fucking with people.
Yeah, and
not anymore.
And rigging Taylor Swift concerts.
Yeah, and then you go to poll, which is politically incorrect, and that's all right wing.
Oh, like, yeah.
Nazi shit, Trump, but it's funny.
Yeah, yeah, super.
Well, half of them like Trump and half of them don't.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
TV, though, all these boards that nobody ever talks about, they're enjoyable.
Yeah.
You know, the TV board and the movie boards are good.
Yeah, I'm a big video game guy, and the video game board is pretty funny. And, yeah, but if you just go to the 4chan subreddit, you can just enjoy all the hilarious green text stories without having to deal with, my God.
Green text is when people post something and then they get a lot of responses from it, but they have to put a little hash in front, or a little carrot in front of it.
It's essentially a method of storytelling.
Yeah.
It's its own interest. That's what's great about the internet, is its own language.
Yeah.
And it's its own method of almost third-person storytelling.
I've been going to 4chan since 2008 or 2009.
We used to talk about it and all the horrors we would see. It's like veteranly. You get that 1,000-yard 4chan stare.
Here's what a dick I used to be. One time I saw Mason looking at a woman on his computer and I said, "Who's that whore?" Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And what was your response?
That's my wife.
Yeah. I felt like shit. I'm like, oh, dude, I was so.
You were, that's, I, you know what?
I was kidding, by the way.
I'm friends with you on Facebook, and watching you over the years, I've noticed a huge change in you.
What do you mean?
Like, you're way more, you're less cynical. You're way more.
You don't follow me on Twitter.
Chill. No, but it was like, back then you were so angry and bitter.
Yeah.
And it was, and you actually have like joy in your life now, which makes me happy, because I consider, even though we don't hang out, I consider you a friend.
Yeah.
And it's like seeing people that you consider friends, even like, because I was such a fan of yours, the porn czar days, you know what I mean? I was such a fan of yours. So it was like you know what, you consider a celebrity your friend in your head.
Yeah.
So it's like you always want celebrities you like to see, like Keanu. You always want to see good things happen to them.
And now I can watch you skyrocket to film legend.
That's the dream, right?
That guy.
Yeah. And it's so nice to see people that you admire and like happy.
When Trump was running, and then shortly after he won the election, I think that's when I realized, you know, Facebook isn't a place for me to discuss politics.
Oh,
again,
yeah,
just to be a troll. I mean, have that. I don't have any convictions. Yeah. So it's difficult to believe in anything when you don't.
That's what me and the other interns would say. We'd be like, what's Tim about? You know? And you'd be like, Tim is chaos.
He's just nuts. Whatever, he's insane.
Whatever,
some people just like to watch the world burn.
You make that joke, but that's legitimately like, that's in my head, whatever. It's kind of, the man, the myth that is,
must be exhausting.
Tim, he knows
is, being a nihilist.
is whatever's funny.
Well, see,
it doesn't matter which direction or whose leg you're pulling or who you're screwing with. It's what's funny.
You see, these days, I the reason I can't stand, I can't name it anything else other than the progressive movement or the woke crowd, is that they've cut the balls off of comedy.
Yeah.
And discussion.
That's true.
We grew up where you could talk about anything. And we spent the 80s and 90s making fun of the religious right and the GOP and, you know, tearing that to pieces and dismantling it. And once that was dismantled, there's a new religion in its place. There's a new, you know, you can't make fun of this, you can't make fun of that. For instance, there's a Simpsons video going around now with Donald Trump, and it's set to West Side Story, and it's the squad. I watched it, and it was the cringiest thing I've ever fucking seen.
Yeah.
The cringiest. It was so cringe. I mean, I get, you know, douche chills thinking about
it. Yeah, douche chills. Like that.
You know, and it's not the fact that it's pro the squad or anti-Trump or whatever. That's not what bothers me. What bothers me is that it's devoid of comedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what I mean? I think that it swings left and right.
Yeah.
And it swings back and forth. And right now I would agree that we've tilted too far to everything is offensive.
Yeah.
Everything hurts me. And
there's,
I think,
no sensible middle. Everything's polarized.
No,
to the left.
I think everybody just is on the outrage police now, and they want to be outraged.
Yeah.
Not even for themselves, for other people.
And they want to get the gold medal when they call it out on Twitter.
Yeah. And I think we just have to, we'll find our middle ground. And you know what's going to happen is there will be another Louis C.K. That comes out, you know, one day.
When Carrot Top gets busted.
Somebody.
Why can't it just be Louis C.K. comes back?
That's true. It could be. He's got the juice.
Yeah.
But, I mean, somebody will come from the ashes of it.
Yeah.
He's genuinely funny and says provocative things, and then it makes it okay for others to follow. It's kind of that watershed movie. Like when The Matrix came out, every movie after that was some dude in a trench coat dodging bullets. And eventually someone will come out to be super edgy, because Louis said the N-word.
Yeah.
In the mid-2000s. In his comedy, nobody ever called him on it. And nobody ever said anything.
Well,
it was
they
cool.
did. It just, there wasn't Twitter yet.
Yeah, there wasn't
and
a huge...
He made jokes about pedophilia. And
yeah,
all
exactly.
Stuff,
so. Like, you know, Louis made jokes that you can't say right now. But that's not to say that someone won't come along and say it eventually.
And then behind what he was saying, there was a kernel of truth.
Oh, yeah.
That one line where he says, he goes, if I came across two dudes blowing each other in a field, I don't know why I would, but just say it. He goes, and one of them looked up at me and said, people from Phoenix are Phoenicians. I'd say, quit being a faggot and suck that dick.
Yeah.
Like current events and want to be the smartest among your friends? Then the Power Pod is the show for you.
The Power Pod is a weekly recap show where we cover the current events of the week.
It's a show where we're not afraid to get serious.
And we're not afraid to have some fun.
So try us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, the WSB Radio app, WSBRadio.com, Stitcher, CastBox. Okay. Anywhere there are podcasts,
we are there.
So power up. Up with the Power Pod!
Radio Labyrinth is sponsored by Atlanta Pizza in Mural, 1565 Georgia 138 in beautiful Conyers, Georgia. Atlanta Pizza in Mural is a longtime local favorite, serving the best pizzas, gyros, Italian beef sandwiches, hot subs, spaghetti, lasagna, and Greek salads in a relaxed, casual setting. Since 1983. Find them on Facebook at facebook.com/ATL Pizza. Interact with other diners, check out the menu, and even start your order. Or AtlantaPizzaEuro.com.
And it's, I think it's cyclical.
Yeah.
It's cyclical. It's just like, you know, Carlin. You know what I mean? Like Carlin.
I've been listening to a lot of old Carlin.
Yeah. Recently. I mean, he's still relevant. And it's like, Carlin stuff. You couldn't say.
No. Rape is funny. People say rape. You can't talk about rape. Rape isn't funny. Yes, it is. Picture Porky Pig raping Elmer Fudd.
Yeah, you couldn't make that joke right now.
No.
But one day, someone will make it okay to make those jokes again. It's just...
We have had young comics on this show, guys that are way younger than us, and they're, you know, they're working comics, so they're doing the grind day in and day out at the comedy club. And some of them have told us, you know, that they're... If you say a certain thing, you have to know you've always had to know your audience, but you have to know that if you're in an audience, especially a comedy club, like an indie comedy club, not like the Punchline where, you know, half of the audience is just looking for something to do on a Friday night, so they go to a comedy club. But the people that are invested in comedy, they're the ones that are going to judge you and get upset if you say something.
But it's like a lot of these comics don't want to play colleges now because, like, it used
to
be...
The old school ones, yeah.
It used to be comics would love going to... play for college kids and
right.
and go out to do those little tours of college campuses and stuff and make some good money. But now everybody's scared to get in front of college students because they're so social justice warriors and everything.
Or, and if they even think you're going to do something wrong, they'll pick at you.
Right, yeah, or they'll kick you off without paying you and stuff. Yeah.
I did stand up a bunch, not a whole bunch, but a lot. And you know, I was at the Laughing Skull when Ron White was there, and we had a great time shooting. And I don't know if I do it now, just because my routine was largely about bestiality and Japanese porn. And,
well, you could probably still do that.
Yeah, maybe a little bit, but it's there's definitely
the classics.
Yeah, the classics.
I don't like him because he's disparaging my bestiality. I like having sex with animals.
Well, I mean, who doesn't?
Whitney, Wisconsin.
Who's Whitney, Wisconsin?
Oh, Whitney. You know,
I don't know anything.
The fellow pervert to my right. Whitney, Wisconsin became...
Oh, I know who that is.
Yeah,
she's
the
on
blonde,
Twitter. Yeah.
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 Yeah. She had a fairly viral video about the benefits of sleeping with your
dog. And then everybody tore her to pieces.
Yeah. And
justifiably.
Yeah, justifiably. Like, she's also... She got in trouble because she was... God, how can I say this without...
You can say
horrific.
She masturbated and then...
A Burger King and then also in a Walmart and put her lady juices all over the joint. And
what do you mean?
She was asking people to smell her perfume and stuff.
Yeah, like smell her fingers and...
Did she get arrested for that?
She did.
Yeah, she did.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
That's disgusting. At least she didn't put it in the ice cream.
Yeah. The fact that she was that white trash pretty,
uh-huh.
you know how every now and then.
And she gets to 30 and everything just goes to hell.
Every now and then, two white trash come together. They make someone halfway attractive.
Yeah.
And then they get those.
The eyes are aligned.
Yeah.
They're where they're supposed to be.
Everything is symmetrical.
Yeah.
Just somehow they beat the odds.
She doesn't have a B and a C cup. She's just they're symmetrical.
Yeah, exactly. And it was but she still has those deep white trash roots. Yeah. Like banging your dog. So she was
she's not far away from the cheeks sinking in, and then
real methy, real methy. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen anything from her in a while. So
okay. she was in jail for a long time. She just got out. A couple months ago.
Is that why she followed her intently?
Was that why she started going viral again?
She came back on Reddit and said, "I'm out of jail and I'm going to do an AMA and I'm going to start over and all this stuff." And then she did the AMA and got zero responses. And then she basically disappeared.
It's so sad when former dog fuckers just fall from grace.
Dog fuckers. There's actually one of the best movies, Bobcat ever made. Man's Best Friend.
Yeah.
Did you see that movie?
Yeah. No. I love Bobcat.
Or was it called Stay?
It was called Stay originally, and then he wanted to go with all those three-word titles.
Yeah, so Man's Best Friend.
Yeah, I think it was something like that.
World's Greatest Dad.
World's Greatest Dad is amazing.
Yes, it is.
I love World's Greatest Dad. Bobcat is really underrated.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't ever get the budget he deserves for
He makes some great movies, though.
Yeah.
Shakes the Clown was great.
Yeah, I like Shakes the Clown. I haven't seen that in years, though, but yeah.
It holds up.
Does it really?
Well, yeah, and then you spend it now if you haven't seen it in, say, 15, 20 years, put it in now, and you're like, oh my God, that's that person. That's that person.
Yeah,
that's
Yeah,
that's Adam Sandler. That's SpongeBob SquarePants. That's LaWanda Page, who's now dead.
Yeah.
What's her classic line?
Fish Eye Fool?
No.
Oh,
when that camera
goes off, he's going, fuck that load down.
Yeah. We were going to see Bobcat last Friday night.
We tried to go see him at Relapse Theater.
He and Dana Gould were doing a tour together. Oh, they're at Relapse. Right outside the theater, they got in a car wreck. And Dana Gould, bruised his lung.
They both broke some ribs, and Bobcat had a concussion.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Next time they'll Uber.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I'm so glad he dropped the bit, you know? I'm so glad he dropped that, and, like, he just started doing his own thing.
Well, he didn't have to do it after he got famous.
Yeah, that's true. Well, some people milk it. You know what I mean? I'm pretty sure, I haven't followed him in years, but I think Carrot Top's still pulling shit out of a suitcase.
Probably. Yes. But I never found him funny, so it's not shocking to me that he would still do that. Yeah. I never thought, I did think Gallagher was funny when I was younger. Because I thought there was something to him smashing watermelons.
Yeah.
The smashing watermelons was just a gag.
But it was fun, but the rest of his routine was funny.
Yeah. He had some Carlin-level shit in his stand-up.
Right.
Yeah.
But he stopped doing it.
Yeah. Right. I loved Gallagher as a kid. They played his specials 24. It was one of those because his specials at the time, because it was towards the crest of his career.
Mm-hmm.
So his specials were cheap to throw on television and run.
Especially
forever.
Comedy Central when it first started.
Yeah. They just milked it dry. So I loved Gallagher. And it wasn't just the watermelon part was my least favorite. Right. It was all the other
gags. I liked
gags.
It because it made other people uncomfortable.
When he had the row of presidents in the background. Yep. And he had other gags that were interesting to a kid. You know,
speaking
what I mean?
Of him, he's another person that got duped by Longmont Potion Castle. Have you ever heard of Longmont Potion Castle?
Mm-mm.
This guy that's been making prank phone calls for about 30 years or 20 years or whatever, and he somehow he uses all sorts of weird, he uses like a synthesizer to fuck with his voice.
Mm.
And it's hard to describe because it's not the Jerky Boys where it's just comedy, gag.
Yeah.
It's a slow build. So he'll call people like Alex Trebek, say, he got Alex Trebek's number. He goes, yeah, we're outside of your house. I got 2,000 pounds of gravel looking to get a COD from. And he called him, tormented him for years. Also, Eddie Money, Kiefer Sutherland. And Kiefer Sutherland loses it. I'm calling the police. I'm going to have my lawyer call you right back. And then I heard him call Gallagher. Gallagher flips out. I'm Gallagher the comedian. Fuck you.
Was it Gallagher or was it his brother?
It was him.
Okay. Yeah. That's so weird that Gallagher had his brother do his bit for decade.
When he had a heart attack or something.
Yeah,
right?
And he franchised it out.
And then they broke up. Yeah.
Getting back to Lamplight, so you can find it on Amazon. You can find it on Netflix.
No, Netflix iTunes. iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, and Amazon. You can purchase it.
Okay. And you have to rent them.
Yeah, you can rent it. You can purchase it. You can buy actual.
I'm going to get the torrent.
What service makes you the most money?
At least you saw it. You know, I don't know. It's a great question.
Yeah.
I assume it's. You should say which one makes my distributor the most
right.
money?
Probably Amazon.
I would imagine. But Yeah, it's
more important than go ahead.
The landscape of Atlanta has changed since you started making this movie, as far as the ease of doing a production. Has that opened up doors for you as far as being all the industry people are here now?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Has this led to anything?
You know, not yet. And we kind of touched on that before, where it was like Lamplight was always going to be a calling card. Mm-hmm. And part of that is proving you can make money.
Right.
So, you know, I once I can start pulling some royalties to show the profitability of Lamplight, that's when I'm going to show. I have a second script called The Industry of Crows, which mm-hmm. is a World War II horror movie, which is an homage to The Thing, one of the greatest movies of all time.
Which one?
Yeah, we love The Thing.
The Carpenter Thing.
Yeah.
No, okay. Well, that's a remake.
Yeah, not the dude
Anthony Quinn.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
Quinn the Eskimo.
No. The John Carpenter.
Yeah,
classic.
What a great movie.
Oh my god, dude! I watched it.
Keith David is so fucking amazing. I love Keith David in anything.
What's great about Keith David is he's always awesome.
Yep.
And he's always in everything.
Yeah.
So you never have to go too long without getting your Keith David fix.
Best fight ever. Best fight scene ever. And They Live.
They Live. Yeah.
And then you played the guy in Platoon. Sniff, wait, smell them pines, sniff that cross mount of pussy down by the river. Hot damn!
I didn't take it out for hair.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Requiem for a Dream, right?
Yeah. Ass to ass.
I know it's pretty, but I didn't take it out for hair.
He's so good.
Yeah. Like,
even the Mass Effect video game series, he's a huge part of that, and he's amazing.
Oh, he's also in Call of Duty. Yeah. Rodriguez, do everything. What was that guy's name? Not Rodriguez, but.
I don't remember.
He's always bossing him around. Go do that.
Yeah. He's in the Navy.
The Navy. What a great voice on that guy.
Yeah.
How'd you get the twig over the berries? Or how'd you get the berries over the twig?
Oh, something about Mary. Yeah. Right. He's everything.
But back to The Thing, you know, Kurt Russell.
Oh, yeah. That's, it's my, even though he's more dry in it.
Yeah.
It's my favorite role of his, just because, I mean, a lot of people will say Big Trouble in Little China, but. It fits him and his visage the most.
Yeah.
His stature.
Right.
This kind of stoic, kind of like a manly man.
Right.
You know what I mean? The hero. It fits him perfectly. The Thing is a flawless film. I watched it a couple months ago, and it has the same appeal of Blade Runner in that you can pause it at any moment.
Yes.
And you could frame on a wall whatever you're looking at.
Did you like the Blade Runner sequel?
I loved it.
I thought it was amazing.
I
wasn't expecting it to be good. Did you like it?
Yeah, I loved it.
I saw the original Blade Runner when I was 11 years old, and that was the movie that made me want to be a director.
Really?
That was.
Is that Ridley Scott?
Ridley Scott. I've seen Blade Runner probably more than any other film, and it has its flaws.
It does, but
it's very slow, and it needed some trimming. Mm-hmm. And Ridley Scott's his own worst enemy when he tries to talk about the film.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about the director's cut, not the Harrison Ford voiceover one, which is genuinely abysmal. But so I have a Blade Runner poster. I have Blade Runner paraphernalia. I hold in the highest regard. So when they were talking about a sequel, everything in me wanted to vomit blood.
Right.
So Denis Villeneuve, or however you say his bloody last name, mm-hmm. the director, he did Sicario, which is a masterpiece.
Sicario is great.
It is a masterpiece.
Fucking beautiful film.
Starring Benicio
del Toro.
Right. Yeah.
Even though I didn't like Enemy, he did Enemy, and I had a lot of respect for the quality of that mm-hmm. film. And I was like, all right, maybe this guy's got it. Maybe he has respect for the film. And the biggest thing was Ridley wasn't in it. Ridley is, he's like Robert De Niro. It's like all the fight in him is gone.
Man, I'll do it. Whatever.
Yeah, you got a piece of pizza I can eat?
Is it comedy? I gotta see my line. He doesn't know his lines ever.
No, he's...
The Blade Runner,
yeah.
Just real quick point, is you can put that on, and the movie was made when? 1981?
I want to say 86.
No, that's way too late.
Yeah,
Blade Runner?
Yeah.
No.
I think it was, if only we had someone with a computer.
Sean Young had was really young in that, so it's got to be early
80s. I want to say it was 85, 86. I could be wrong. Let's see.
I'm saying 81 or
survey
82.
Survey sales.
Jeff?
82.
82.
Oh,
but you watch
look
that.
Like an asshole.
No, you don't. But when you watch that in the beginning, it's one of those films from a long time ago where, you know, you're watching their vision of what the future would look like, and it doesn't look stupid.
No.
Like, you watch the Planet of the Apes movies where they get to the future, especially that fourth one, Conquest.
Uh-huh.
where, you know, Ricardo Montalban. Do you know this one?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah,
they didn't have any money, so they shot it at Century City in L.A. That whole thing, the whole fucking movie shot in Century City.
Is that the one with the robot?
No.
Okay, which one?
No, it's the one where they rebel. All the dogs and cats have died, so the chimps and gorillas are slaves.
Okay, yeah.
And there's a command center, and then they end up fighting it. You watch that, you know, people, you know, everybody in the future wears turtlenecks and a blazer, and that's just the way it is. And, you know, and it's just ridiculous. And the cars, you don't see the wheels; they just go down the road.
Blade Runner is timeless.
Yeah,
it still holds up to this day.
So does RoboCop, as far as that.
RoboCop
that's concerned.
is an amazing movie.
Yeah,
it's an amazing.
Sequels suck, but well, actually, two's good.
The remake
was not good though.
The remake was garbage.
If two had had the budget of one,
yeah,
it would be considered better than
Jesus. Why didn't it have a budget?
You know, some coked out 80s executive thought, you know, let's cut some corners,
yeah,
and we'll make it for lower money, we'll get more money, whatever, man. And
we just finished that book, Wild and Crazy Guys, by Nick Desimallian or whatever,
right.
And he's talking about how Beverly Hills Cop 3. There was no budget, and it's a shit movie. Mm-hmm. They were going to shoot it at Disneyland, and they ended up just shooting it at a generic. I highly recommend that book if you're a fan of the SNL guys who went on to be big stars in the 80s. Fantastic.
Yeah, I read Steve
book.
Martin's book, and it was really good.
Born Standing Up, great book.
But the Blade Runner sequel is, in my opinion, the best sequel that has ever been made.
Really?
Like,
it's no Grease 2, but it's...
Well, yeah, it's close.
After that, I would say Aliens.
Aliens is a great sequel.
Is an amazing sequel. And it's for the same reason that they're both amazing. It's that they didn't try to remake the original.
Right.
They took the universe and they went into a different direction with it.
Empire?
Yeah, Empire, yeah.
Strikes Back for the unenlightened.
Do we even want to talk to people who don't understand what Empire is?
Yeah.
Just turn the podcast off if you hear Empire and you're befuddled.
I don't know what they're talking about. What did Kevin Smith announce this week that he's
involved? Doing He-Man all series? Right.
Oh God!
I wonder if that'd be any good.
I am so tired.
They ruined She-Ra.
I'm so tired of the cult of nostalgia.
Yeah, I am too.
I'm so tired of it. It doesn't matter what something is. If somebody remembers it,
yeah.
We need to turn it into a product. And here's the sad part: it's bought.
Yeah.
It's always bought because somebody around, I remember Rocco's Modern Life. Let me watch that.
And then they make it, and then everybody who grew up liking it hates it.
I'll tell you what, though. I'm looking forward to that Dave Willis, Kevin Smith, Howard the Duck series.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah. Well, anything Dave touches is gold.
Dave's going to make it great.
Yeah.
That's still one of my happiest. That's my happiest memory. Of meeting him? Well, the day he was on, and I was an intern.
The fire alarm day?
Yeah, the fire alarm day, you remember. So it was just...
And then they had the mutt car downstairs too, right? From Dumber and Dumberer?
Yeah. And Dave was, we were just shooting the shit in the parking lot with Dave. It was like, oh my God, this guy's responsible for my entire childhood. Like everything from Space Ghost.
Space Ghost Coast to Coast.
Remember how
subversive it was to watch that when no one else knew what it was?
Space Ghost, if you watch the other episode, it's still good because it's still befuddling.
Yeah.
It was befuddling then, and it's befuddling now.
The one with Willie Nelson where he's just confused.
Yeah, celebrities have no idea. Yeah, Bjork.
Yeah.
And doing Meatwad to Dave and having him do Meatwad back to me.
Do Meatwad. I can't do Meatwad.
Your hair is good to eat.
That's great.
Ow. Yeah, it's a great Meatwad.
And it was, I was so starstruck. I remember like I was in my head. I was like, we're going to be dueling Meatwads. This is going to be comedy gold. And I was so starstruck by Dave that it was just essentially like, yeah, Meatwad. And it was just, my comedy juice was dry.
That's how I feel when I go have lunch with him in Midtown. I'm just like, I have to get over.
Yeah.
I mean, at first, not now, but when he would first say, hey, let's get together and have lunch and we'll talk about stuff, I'd go meet him and I'd be like, oh, I'd be all uncomfortable. I know I'm horrible and not funny. Stop looking at me. Now it's, you know, whatever.
But you get used to it.
Because he's just a really cool
guy.
He's
a down-to-earth dude.
Yeah, down-to-earth guy. All those guys are.
And I think that's why his comedy really works, especially like Squidbillies or something.
Oh, yeah. Squidbillies is great. And he and Jim Fortier do such a great job on that show.
Yeah. And Squidbillies is great for two reasons. There's just the pure comedy of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's...
And I'm on it.
So. the if you're a Georgia native,
yeah,
there is a layer of comedy
that's that, specific to
yeah,
Georgia.
The thing I always point to is the Home Depot, like the race that was like in the second season, where it's like nobody would get that
right
if you weren't a Georgia native sitting in the Braves game, mm-hmm. like understand, like it would just be this weird, like I'm sure like that bit just falls flat on anybody other than a Georgia native,
right.
You know, or hellish Bill, or what was it? Hellish J from Ella J. You know, like nobody's gonna get that. You're like,
I love that they did a parody of Larry the Cable Guy, and it was an alien. Uh-huh. Do it to it,
do it to it,
do it to it.
Like it's that, and that comedy works because he's grounded. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not, I wouldn't call it lowbrow, but it's just it's of the people. You know what I mean? It's
not gross out comedy.
Yeah,
at
it's
all.
Not pretentious.
It's gross, but it's not gross.
Yeah, yeah. He's not trying to, you know what I mean? He's not trying to push you and make you go, ugh, and right. That's why it's funny.
Like in that scene where Early is taking the character that I'm voicing and showing him the B&B, and goes, mm-hmm. Oh, here's our hot tub. What does she say? Haters, bro. Do the bubbles.
It's kind of, it's in the same thing of like South Park, where it's like, South Park is, people who don't watch South Park, and I haven't seen it in a couple seasons, but for the first 12 seasons when they were doing non-linear storytelling, when it was just whatever the topic of the day was, that was my epoch of South Park. And I would tell people, it's the smartest satire since Mark Twain.
It is.
And they would roll their eyes because they didn't watch it.
Oh, they're just kids.
Yeah, they're just
gross.
Farting, they're cursing. And it's like, no, that is just...
South Park is still good.
Oh, is it?
See, people will say, I don't like it, blah, 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 but they do that with everything. But it is consistent because it's the same guys doing it.
Yeah.
And it's still the best.
I have no doubt that. It's just kind of like, for me, its time and its place and its voice resonated for me when it was that episodic, the singular voice kind of, the singular episode thing. But it's just so smart. And it does that not lowbrow, but once again, of the people that the jokes...
And still relevant because now the principal is principal. What's his name?
Principal PC principal.
Yeah, PC principal.
Yeah, PC principal. Yeah, I've seen those clips.
Are you triggering? Yeah. Oh, I believe there's a triggering going on here. But you can't beat him. You can't beat Randy on a hippity hop. No, was actually his nuts. Yeah, singing Buffalo Soldier.
The tumors. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, it's once again, if you just bring that to somebody who's like, oh yeah, he gets his testicle humor. No, it was an analysis of. The whole pot culture and
how they banned Kentucky Fried Chicken, but you could get weed.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the sub story is Cartman becoming Scarface and then going down to Panama or going down to Colombia.
Yeah.
And it's the colonel and they throw the guy out of the helicopter. But it's a kid.
Yeah. But it's also a commentary on the healthcare system where people are willing to, you know, what do you got to go through to get help?
Yeah.
So.
And the ridiculousness of just not making it legal.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing going on, Stan. Just getting a little cancer. Get dad a beer. Just getting a little cancer.
Yeah, man.
Randy's such a great character. Well, Mason, what's next for you?
Well, it's just like kind of like we talked about. I still work on my day job, and the hope is that this turns enough money where I could start shopping it around. I have connections now in terms of like just people in the industry that you can talk to and say, but you have to have something to say. And it's like, yes, I got a script, but the script I stupidly wrote a script that actually requires a budget.
Yeah,
that was my mistake. So I may have to go back and
what
write
is it again?
Script. Lamplight is my movie. The script I wrote is Industry of Crows. The Thing homage.
Tell us a little bit about that if you can. Whatever.
I don't
want to
tell
too
much about it, but it's essentially it takes place in a POW camp, the most secret POW camp.
Europe or Japan or Asia?
In the forests of Poland.
Okay.
And it's deep behind enemy lines, and it's essentially, this is where they keep the highest ranking POWs.
Okay.
And it's super secret. And there's some other reasons why I don't want to talk about, but without spoiling it. But essentially, a entity like the Thing crashes into the middle of the forest and starts to kind of investigate. And I don't want to talk about anything, but it's essentially the predator. It's the double enemy, because not only are you following the protagonist in Nazi Germany while he's a prisoner, but also there's this other exterior force. And even if he does succeed, he's still in the middle of war torn. You know, winning is losing. Yeah. So it's like it's dealing with a lot of those conflicts. So
right.
It's one of the best things I've ever written, and it's when people do read it, they go, God damn, that's a movie.
Well, I hope that you, I hope you get that in front of the right
eyes,
man. I hope
so, man. Too, man.
And
I
maybe a lamplight will get you in there.
Pretty girl. Pretty, pretty girl.
Hey, everybody, this is Tim. You know, a few weeks ago, I listened to an episode of Fitzdog Radio. It's a podcast hosted by comedian Greg Fitzsimmons. His guest, a journalist, and it turns out a good friend of his, Tom O'Neill, was plugging his latest book, Chaos, Charles Manson, the CIA, and the Secret History of the 60s. Now, this is a perfect mix of ingredients for Tim Andrews, me, to pique my interest. You have Hollywood gossip, CIA, MKUltra, conspiracies, and Charles Manson. So I read the book, and now I was able to secure an interview with him. Here is me having a conversation with Tom O'Neill. Tom O'Neill, thank you for calling Radio Labyrinth.
Oh, you're welcome, Tim.
So you were assigned to write a piece by Premier Magazine on the 30th anniversary of the Manson Tate-LaBianca murders, am I right?
That's correct, yes.
So how did one magazine assignment turn into 2 decades of painstaking research and basically hoofing it everywhere on your feet reporting?
I think it was just, it's pretty simple. I just started to find holes in the official case. And once you start trying to get to the bottom of why stuff was lied about or covered up, the next thing you know, you're deep into an investigation that's pretty hard to get the answers to because it's been so long and it was hard to access documents and people. But once those chips started falling and I started getting information, I just knew I was on to something important, so I kept pushing, and it just took 20 years to get all the answers I was trying to get. And there's still a lot, as you'll see in the book, that are left, a lot of questions left unanswered that I'm hoping possibly to answer in either a follow-up book or a podcast like this or something.
So is this something that you haven't closed the door on, that there's still information that you're gathering and there's still work that you're willing to put into it even after all those years?
Yeah, I was hoping to close the door on it, but I never really expected that I would. And sure enough, once the book was finished in March and I thought I'd stop working on it, there's just so many dangling ends and people coming to me with information and so much material that my co-author and I left out of the book that we would like to have see some light. So we've been talking about, you know, producing something, either a podcast or a second book.
I think either would be great, and I would like both. Now, a podcast, yeah. you would be able to have interviews with people and, you know, build kind of a narrative, you know, something that grips people audio-wise. But again, the book, I couldn't put it down. And I've been kind of a Manson file. I hate to say that, but I have been. At least the case ever since I was in high school and I read Helter Skelter. And if we can touch on it a little bit, you spent an awful lot of time talking to Bugliosi, the prosecutor of the case, throughout
right.
the years.
Right.
Who he passed away, right?
In 2015, yes.
2015, passed away. Now, was there anything that you left out of the book, maybe, that you might be willing to share in the future from Vincent Bugliosi?
About him or about the case?
About him in general, because it seems to me, after reading the book and without revealing too much, because we want people to read the book, he seems to have either been caught up in his own stardom or just inept.
Yeah, he wasn't inept, definitely. He was a pretty brilliant guy, even though we were at odds. He was also pretty cunning, maybe. I mean, the irony is I found so many similarities between him and Manson, also including the fact that both had an element of, well, Manson definitely, but surprisingly, Bugliosi too, an element of danger and violence to their personalities. And you'll see why I'm saying that now when your listeners read the book.
Right.
One thing that I regretted not being able to use in the book, and it was just for space purposes, was a lot of information I found about Bugliosi's effort to buttress the Warren Commission findings with his 20-year project that took 20 years to write, Reclaiming History, which was his argument that Oswald acted alone in the assassination of John F. Kennedy. And again, if your listeners read the book, they'll find out why the Kennedy assassination is important and relevant to the Manson case and Bugliosi. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't able to get into that in the book just for space purposes. Also, the Sirhan case, the accused or convicted assassin of Robert F. Kennedy, we had a couple chapters on that we had to leave out for space purposes that we want to do in the second book.
Two more things that captivate me and people who skirt the edge of conspiracy theory. Now, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I'm really interested in hearing, you know, more of the story than you hear from watching the news or seeing a documentary on PBS. So, for instance, a 1971 broadcast of Dialogue Assassination with she's long since passed away, but she's a researcher named Mae Brussel. Are you familiar with her?
I stumbled upon her in my first probably 6 months of reporting. And at first, she was already dead, but you could access, not on the internet. I actually had to either pay or borrow, or somebody donated, I can't remember, I'd have to look, a lot of audio tapes of her early broadcasts from the 70s.
Right.
And some of her writings. And at first I thought she was a nut. And then when I started finding stuff independently that I had originally seen reported by her first, I went back to her stuff. I actually, this isn't in the book, but I really worked hard to try to get her original archive, uh-huh. which went to some other people that she worked with or supported her. And the one woman I was dealing with was just not cooperative at all. And she's sitting on all of Mae Brussel's files, or she was. I don't even know if that woman's still alive, because I gave up trying to get this stuff probably around 2005 or 2006. But she was definitely, ahead of her time, Mae Brussel. And she did go off on insane tangents, mm-hmm. but the nucleus of a lot of her reporting was pretty on the nose.
Touching on the MK Ultra and the CIA involvement, and brainwashing is a generic term, but for our purposes here, brainwashing some of these people, James Earl Ray, when you're talking about MLK, Oswald, when you're talking about JFK, and again, Sirhan, who is a Palestinian expatriate living in the United States that was charged with Robert F. Kennedy's death, but it's still people to this day do not believe that he even fired the gun.
Including Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the son
right.
of the senator, who finally, after years of kind of behind the scenes supporting a movement to get Sirhan a new evidentiary hearing, went public about a year ago and wrote, I think it was a letter or an op-ed, saying that it's time to, face the fact that it looks like Sirhan didn't fire the fatal bullet that killed his father.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty big. There's a lot of research I did on Sirhan and Robert Kennedy's assassination that I can't wait to share.
Were you ever a person who considered yourself a conspiracy theorist, or were you interested in conspiracies?
Not at all. In fact, that's another reason why it took so long, is every time my reporting led me to this crazy conspiracy stuff, I would back away and then circle back. And finally, when I was forced to dig in and research, and once I found proof of some of the wilder stuff, I couldn't consider a conspiracy anymore.
How about now? Do you find yourself more open to that idea?
I'm more open-minded about it, but I'm still real careful, because a lot of people want to believe conspiracies so much. And even in the Manson case, I'm not going to name names, but there are authors who put out these alternative scenarios and narratives that might be like half right, but they present them as 100% right by making these leaps where they suggest that they have proof of something, and you have to read real closely to realize they're never actually offering proof of these connections or documents they say they have. And that's been frustrating for me, because you see the book, and especially if you go to my endnotes, which had 60 pages of endnotes, you'll see that everything that I present in the book is backed up by documentation and
collaboration. Yeah, I can feel that the reason it took so long to do when you read the book is that there's painstaking research and doubling back, like you said, and confirming a lot of things, or you wouldn't have put it in the book. And
right.
it's to me, reading it as somebody who read Helter Skelter in high school, who's seen that 70s movie, which is really, really bad and exploitative, and to this day, there's over 35 films and documentaries that have been made about the Tate LaBianca murders or Charles Manson in general, the most recent being Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, is that this has been a moneymaker for years for people. You know, sensationalist moneymaker. NBC had a series a couple of years ago called Aquarius with David Duchovny, which skirted around it. And my wife watched it, and I kept yelling, "That's not true. That's not right. That's not right."
I watched the first episode. I don't think I made it through the first episode. At one point, they had a scenario where Manson was blackmailing the mayor because he'd had an affair with the mayor's, I think, press secretary, who was a man. It was just crazy leaps of imagination. And I have a problem with that when they're writing about real living characters, especially, you know, the fact that these people had victims who were also alive. I think that does an injustice to the memories of the victims I don't have as much of a problem with them, you know, dramatizing what happened, but when they start making stuff up, that seems to exploit, you know, the real pain that the victims went through and their relatives.
How do you feel about Once Upon a Time in America, if you've seen, or in Hollywood, if you've seen it?
Well, I saw it, but if I answered that, it might spoil it for your listeners, because my, you know, biggest question of it has to do with the ending.
The revisionist history?
Yeah, no, we just gave a little bit away there. I mean, most people probably know that much, but
right.
I guess without providing a spoiler, I didn't understand. Yeah, you know, I honestly really was opposed to it, but then the very last couple, the last scene in the driveway was so moving to me that I thought, well, maybe it redeemed what came before it.
Yeah.
There was just something in the over-the-top violence that, he's shot, and I know that's his trademark, but hearing an audience, you know, laugh and cheer and kind of hoot and holler during that seemed disrespectful to the victims, who were actually killed in a pretty horrific manner.
Yeah.
In reality, so I hope that didn't give too much away. But, you know, I'm going to actually go see it again, because my expectations were so high the first time. Now I kind of want to see it a little more objectively, so maybe this week I'll try to get into a theater to see it one more time.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of what Tarantino was going to do. And when I go in to see movies, especially his recently, I just kind of keep my brain shut down and don't try to speculate. And it was rather shocking, you know, and we've talked about it on this show, you know, a couple of times now, but I don't want to spoil it if no one's seen it, but it was really, really shocking. And, you know, people were laughing and clapping and hooting and hollering. And I felt weird because what you're seeing on the screen isn't something that you would normally clap and cheer for, especially.
I know that was really disturbing to me. You know, he actually got a copy of my book about 6 weeks ago because we have a mutual friend.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, she's actually very, very close to him. One of 10 people that went to his wedding. And she's always getting, you know, requests for people to put them in touch with Tarantino or give him this or that. And, you know, she knew me for about 15 years and she knew how hard I worked on this. So she said she would give it to him, but first she had to read the book to make sure that, you know, she wanted to be able to endorse it if she gave it to him.
Mm-hmm.
So she did. She said, "I read it in 2 days. I couldn't put it down and I really want him to read it. I wish he had it before he made the movie." So she gave it to him right around the week that the film was coming out. And, you know, I doubt that he's had any time to look at it. But Jay Oberman, who's a really respected film critic, he used to be at the Village Voice for years, and now he writes for the New York Review of Books, did a pretty amazing review of the Tarantino movie yesterday, and the New York Review of Books was published yesterday. And, I mean, it just basically underlined everything that I felt, probably couldn't articulate about what I liked and didn't like about the movie. But in the end, I think he liked it a lot. Mm-hmm. But he also mentioned my book and how it was importantly, you know, writing a new draft of the history of that era. And I know Tarantino is going to see that review because he's a film geek and Jay Oberman is probably one of his idols and gods. So I'm glad. I'm hoping that if he hasn't read the book now yet, that he sees that and cracks the book open.
I think for people who know a lot about the Tate-LaBianca murders and think they know an awful lot about Charles Manson, and let's face it, we live in this country, and true crime is something that people get obsessed with. But to me now, the most important things that you need to listen to or read are your book, Chaos. And
thanks.
And You Must Remember This, in which Karina Longworth does the podcast about old Hollywood. She did this very long series about Charles Manson. So I'm letting people out there know that it was very well done. The narrative was great. And if you take that and then read your book shortly thereafter, you can kind of fill in the blanks in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
At least I felt that way.
Right.
And there's been books written about Hollywood and, you know, the government, the military, the CIA being involved, especially there in Wonderland and in that area. Well, I guess there's a naval observatory up there that they supposedly used. And Jim Morrison and his father and on and on and on. But the thing that always fascinated me is how close some of the biggest celebrities of the day were to Charles Manson. Maybe not the family, but to him for sure.
And the family, I think.
Yeah.
Actually, some of the lesser women who, you know, if you follow the case, you know who they are. But if you didn't, you never heard of them.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them, like Catherine Gillis, was a Buffalo Springfield groupie who was traveling with the band and was later a hardcore member of the family. And, of course, Terry Melcher, Doris Day's son, produced Buffalo Springfield. So it wasn't just, you know, Manson and, you know, the core followers, but they had their tentacles all over that scene, that music and film world of 1967 or 68 and 69 Hollywood.
You think we'll ever get to the bottom of it? Do you think someone will ever come forward with more information than even you have been able to dig up?
I hope so. You know, I don't know. I've been getting, you know, I get so many emails now because my and probably 50% of the emails I get are people telling me they have this information that they want to share with me. And I would say about 5% of those emails actually have something that I respond to. And I tell them, you know, if they can wait till September or October when the publicity part of the book dies down,
mm-hmm.
I do want to talk to them. And there have been a couple startling people that have come to me who I know, I already knew who they were. And he's like, wouldn't talk to me before, or I wasn't able to find them. But they've come forward because of the book. So that's encouraging. And you know, I'm hoping that by just putting out all the information I did in the book, it might inspire other people who have more years ahead of them and time to pick up, you know, the threads and follow them, you know, including people in the mainstream media like LA Times, New York Times, Washington Post reporters, who I wish would look at some of the stuff that I've documented and you know, take it in a larger context of what it means, especially about Kennedy assassination and the Manson murders.
What is your next endeavor?
You know, I thought I was going to do something completely different than this, and I had a couple ideas that I was excited about, but right now we're still trying to see, you know, there's a couple big things coming out connected to the book, you know, as far as reviews and stories and pretty important publications. And I'm waiting to see the reaction and response to that. And then my collaborator, I told him I wouldn't do a second book without him,
mm-hmm.
because he's the one who can rein me in and keep me on track. And he and I did the book in about 2.5 years after I've been trying to do it for 17.
Yeah,
and he's luckily as obsessed with it all as I am now. So if he does it with me, and our publisher's interested, we'll probably, you know, start that next.
Well, from randomly listening to Fitzdog Radio and hearing the great interview you did with Greg Fitzsimmons, who does a really good podcast, but I just happened to tune in that day. I went out and immediately bought Chaos, Charles Manson, the CIA, and the Secret History of the 60s by my current guest, Tom O'Neill. It is available.
I got to hang on 1 second. So I have to thank Fitz for you being aware of this book.
Uh-huh.
Oh, wow. You know, he's one of my oldest friends. That's why I was on his show. And he and I have a running competition about who was obligated to who for more. Like, I helped him get 3 apartments. He says he helped me get my collaborator, things like that. So now I have to tell him that this podcast wouldn't have happened if I hadn't done his first.
If a radio guy in Atlanta who used to have him on his show back when he was doing Shock Jock Radio. Yes. We used to have him on.
Oh, yeah. Will he remember you?
Probably not. He'll remember the regular guys, but he won't remember me.
All right. Well, I'll mention it to him. I'll probably be talking to him this week.
Yeah, but that was, again, there's very little that I will start listening to or watching and, I'm going to pause this and go outside and have a cigarette. The other things I don't put down, and Chaos was one of those books that I couldn't put down. So, I really, really appreciate you taking the time and out there. I encourage you to get the book. You can get the audio version at Audible, or you can find the book wherever books are sold and Amazon.com. So.
And one last thing, I do have 2 websites for the book where people can go to see the documents that we were talking about. And
oh, cool.
Actually hear snippets of audio interviews. One is an Instagram page and one is a Facebook page. They're pretty essentially the same, but they have the same material, so go to one or the other. I can't actually even remember what they're called, but if you just Google my name, Manson, and Facebook, that'll take it to you, or Instagram.
I'll find them and put them at the end of this as well.
Oh, super.
One last thing. Did you record your conversations with Charles Manson?
Yeah. In fact, we have a little snippet of there. And Little Brown, my publisher, did it. They asked me for some of the audio of the Manson interview. So I sent that to them, and they did a little animated thing. And there's a lot more. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's on tape with Charlie. Actually, a lot of people that are dead now, like Charlie Bugliosi, Terry Melcher, all these people, fighting with me, essentially, and threatening me. That's all on audio tape. So that'll be in the podcast, but I'm releasing little snippets on those 2 websites, too.
And then when the reader or listener out there, when you get to the part where Tom starts talking about his interaction with Charles, and you're familiar with Charles Manson's interviews, it's really fascinating. And that leads me to my very last question, and I'll let you go. If you've watched all those interviews that he's done with Tom Snyder, Geraldo, throughout the years, did you ever get the feeling that he was putting an act on?
You got to see what I say in the book. Yeah, I came away with a very strong impression that that's exactly what he was doing.
Awesome. So you got to listen to the book out there, and I'm an audiobook guy, or go out and buy and read it if you don't have lazy eyes like I do. Tom O'Neill, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Tim. I enjoyed it.
And I look forward to anything else you're putting out, because now you got a fan.
Okay, I'll let you know.
Thank you, dude.
All right, take care.
Take care, Tom. So. And thanks for coming on the show and telling us about your movie. Tell us again where people can find Lamplight.
Lamplight, you can search it on pretty much everything other than Netflix, because Netflix they don't buy anything anymore.
No.
They only make now. Essentially, they only buy, I think I read somewhere in the Variety, like 2% of their content now.
Mm-hmm.
And everything else is made. That's where the money is, especially now that Disney's pulling everything from Netflix.
Well, in that case, it gives Netflix an opportunity to create more.
Yeah.
Because, I don't like the fact that Disney owns everything now.
I absolutely hate it.
But it does leave a void for other shit.
Yeah, yeah. And you got to think, I was depressed when Disney bought Fox.
So was I.
Because it's like, now Disney literally owns everyone's childhood.
Uh-huh.
From the bottom up.
And I like Spider-Man.
I was just going to say that. I'm happy that it went back to... And people were giving me shit yesterday. Those movies and Venom and all that. I don't give a fuck. Yeah. I don't like... I'm sick of seeing Spider-Man being a teenage wisecracking kid. And that's been that way ever since the first Spider-Man Sam Raimi put out.
Yeah.
I want to see a story arc a la Batman where Spider-Man is an adult and he's married to MJ and he's still dealing with that shit, because there's tons and tons of that shit in the comic books.
Oh, yeah.
Into the Spider-Verse, man. You gotta watch that.
I did like it. Was Into the Spider-Verse is great. Okay. Yeah,
Into the Spider-Verse.
And I'm cool if they take the Morales character.
Miles
Morales and make that movie. Whatever. Make a movie. But just, I'm sick of the same old boring shit and that Marvel MCU shit. I watched The Avengers. I was like, okay, you could have cut 90. You could have cut 40% of that film out, and it would have been better.
Yeah. It was a little long in the tooth. And the MCU, I think Kevin Feige? However you say Feige?
How do you say it?
I don't know.
Yeah. However you say his bloody last name. He's the essentially the grand puppet master. He's an incredibly intelligent man, and I think he's going to do the right thing. I hope he does, and that's just give the universe a rest.
Have they gotten rid of Kathleen Kennedy in the Star Wars universe yet? Because that's another problem.
Oh, my God. That's... I was on board for The Force Awakens. Mm-hmm. I was like, all right, yes, this is a rehashing of The New Hope, but...
It was good, though.
It was good. It was entertaining, and it had the spirit of Star Wars. Uh-huh. You felt like it was a fun adventure, and it wasn't... It didn't have the George Lucas stank all over it.
The Last Jedi was trash.
And then The Last Jedi came along, and it... Well, let me go back a little bit. Rogue One came along.
Great.
And...
I liked it.
Well, I had huge problems with it from a movie standpoint.
Yeah.
It not to go too nerdy into it, but I only care that it's a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't have loyalty to Star Wars, A New Hope and Empire and the first part of Return of the Jedi because because of some deep and ingrained merchandising loyalty.
Yes.
Because they're good movies.
Right.
They're fun. So it's like Rogue One wasn't a fun movie to me.
Yeah.
And then the
Then
The Force of The Last Jedi came along and it was just a horror show of a movie.
Yeah.
It was like, why is this person doing it? Why this is not Luke Skywalker. Like Luke, the
That's
guy.
That's why I go to Red Letter Media and watch.
Dude.
Star Wars.
You just gave me the biggest nerd boner.
Star Wars. It was the biggest piece of shit since my son.
Red Letter.
Tishy.
if you aren't a fan, if you don't have no idea what Red Letter Media is.
Go find it.
As soon as this podcast wraps up and after you purchase my movie.
Yes.
Go
Lamp
to YouTube.
Is the biggest disappointment since The Force Awakens.
I would be honored if they mentioned it, even if it was the lampoon.
I got into him with Mr. Limp. What's not Mr. Limpet? It's Mr. What's his name? The guy.
Mr. Plinkett?
Mr. Plinkett. Okay. I got into Mr. Plinkett first, and now I watch their videos. Half in the Bag is great. Those guys are really cool.
So Red Letter Media, if you don't know.
Are you into them, Jeff?
Nah, I haven't checked it out.
Check it. You would like it. You would totally like it.
It's they're not only, it's, I knew that you would love them simply because it's that kind of non-sellout humor.
Yeah.
And that I know that really appeals to you. And that's very much what they're about. They don't give a fuck about Disney or mm-hmm. what anyone has to say. They don't see every Marvel movie. They just go see what appeals to them.
Yeah.
And I credit Red Letter Media in the credits of Lamplight.
Oh, really?
Because when I was making Best of the Worst, do you watch the Best of the Worst portion where they watch bad movies?
Yes, yes, yes.
That's my favorite portion of it. I grew up on MST3K. And you should watch Red Letter Media if you're a fan of film just for their intelligent discussions about
yeah,
it. They're so smart.
Go to YouTube. Type in Red Letter Media and just enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
If you're a dork like we are.
If you have any appeals for movies, if you love movies in any way, watch it because they're so smart and they're so keen. When I was doing Lamplight, they would make fun of B movies and stuff like that. And what they would see and catch on, I wouldn't. And I would go, oh, people are paying that close attention. Mm-hmm. And that motivated me so many. I can't tell you how many times I went back and reshot something because I said, those Red Letter Media motherfuckers would see this, and I wouldn't.
And I like the Gen X guys who aren't sick-ass fanboys,
uh-huh.
who can deconstruct without, like you just said, kissing ass.
Yeah, and they do not kneel to anyone.
Nope.
They actively make fun of the people that kneel to Disney mm-hmm. and the altar of Disney.
And in the original videos Mr. Plinkett did for Star Wars, they keep showing Kevin Smith's face.
Yeah.
Which isn't fair, because Kevin is a self-made filmmaker.
Uh-huh.
And he likes Star Wars, so let him do his geek thing, so we can fund the things that we like.
They're blocked on Twitter from him. They because they once said something.
He blocked them.
Yeah, remember back the regular guys were Kevin Smith pissed them off, like y'all.
Kevin Smith did win.
Yeah, like didn't he block y'all at one point?
I thought
because Steve had said something or something, and. It really pissed Kevin off or something.
Was this your time?
Yeah, and he would not do the show or whatever anymore for a period. I don't know if he ever did it again, but he wouldn't do the show and he was pissed. And the same thing happened to them, where they're blocked on Twitter and they have no idea why. I think
I can't imagine Steve even knowing anything Kevin Smith's ever done. No,
well, it was, I think it was related to an interview. Like you guys had interviewed him or something like that, and he was kind of a dick or something. And then from there, I don't remember all
the
details.
He was in the studio.
Yeah, I don't remember. He may have also forgotten it at some point.
I'm sure he didn't think about it much.
Yeah, I know. I don't think he's stewing on his mountain of money.
What did that guy in Atlanta who does that horrible morning show on Rock 100.5 with that real asshole? Not the regular guys. That's not what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay. Fair
enough. Talking about the new morning show.
Yeah. But yeah, no, they're so good. They're so good.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for coming in. I hope we can have you back.
I would love to be back.
What do you think, Jeff?
Yeah, let us know if you get that new project off the ground and you want to promote it. And if you...
Or just sometime come back and talk fucking movies.
Yeah,
just...
I would love it. Nerding out over movies, pop culture, and pornography is just, it's just the best.
I don't really talk about it a lot because I don't really know
a lot.
You
could do all pornography movies.
That may be episode. Your highest. Like Dave watches porn. Have you ever seen that?
Dave's old porn.
Yeah, Dave's old porn. Dave Attell.
Oh yeah, yeah. That show was great.
That's the best thing. Dave Attell is.
And he had them on. He had Seika on.
Yeah, I talked Tracy to Dave Lords. Behind the punchline about that show back when it was on. I was like pitching stars I wanted to see on that.
What was he saying? Was he laughing?
He was like, yeah, that would be a great interview.
Yeah, that would be great.
Dave Attell is just amazing. Everyone forgets how popular Insomniac was.
Everybody forgets how huge he was, 2000 to 2005.
Oh, my God.
Ubiquitous.
He was my idol back then.
Now you can't.
He's still great,
and you can't
though.
Find him anywhere. Yeah.
Well, he still tours, and he does his comedy. He hasn't changed a bit.
Yeah, maybe that's what, maybe it's back to that whole Louis C.K. thing to bring everything right back around. Right. Maybe because Dave doesn't give a fuck.
I want to see.
Dark as shit.
I want Louis C.K. to start touring again. I know he's working on stuff.
I think it's been enough time.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. And if he comes here, let the millennial chicks who, you know, in their you know, can't use some 80s language there.
I got to go.
Some of their allies in the male, whatever. See, it's just easier to use derogatory.
Who was it?
Terms.
Who was it? Sarah Silverman was like, yeah, he beat off in front of me. Who cares?
Yeah. Well, Tig Notaro didn't like it.
But now Sarah Silverman's in trouble.
Yeah. Well, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
She had blackface on making fun of blackface.
Yes.
What, are people not going to watch Mad Men? I mean, things exist in eras.
Yeah.
And you're showing that it existed in an era or you're parodying it.
Yes. That's the important part, the meaning behind
people
it.
People are too dumb.
Yeah.
I don't want to see it.
Yeah, it's the knee-jerk thing. Well, here's the thing. Being outraged gets you lots of retweets.
Exactly.
That's the problem. Even if you're not angry, the right and left both does it.
I know what I mean?
I know. It's like if you can get angry enough about something, that's the whole reason Alex Jones exists, is because the more insane you say something,
he's a non-person now.
Yeah, he's
all right. Before we leave, what's your best impression?
Oh God, Gollum.
Meatwad is pretty fucking good.
The thieves. The dirty, stinking thieves.
That's awesome.
That's great.
Those are from us.
Yeah. You do an impersonation of me?
No, I would never do that. Not to your face. Yeah. I never know. No, I don't. You know, all my voices are comical. I can't do regular. That's what makes your a lot of what
I can't
you,
do what you do.
I
don't do Smeagol.
Yeah. Smeagol. No, like Kermit, like, why are there so many songs? It's like, they're more extreme voices. I can't do regular voices, which is what made you, because you could do impersonate, everyone can do, not everyone, but a lot of impressionists go to the extremes because it's impersonating the right, that's why like George W. Bush or something where like they're kind of normal people. That's why those SNL impersonations took off.
Right.
It's because you can do a really good regular guy,
mm-hmm.
then like it's way more impressive than doing like.
And there's very few people that I think I actually sound like, but it's taking that, just the kernel of their voice and making absurdity out of it.
Yeah. Like I think Dana Carvey said it in the SNL days where it's like you take one mannerism and you blow it up and everyone goes, oh, that's it. Because like Bush didn't go, not gonna die. He didn't do that the time.
No.
But now everyone here is not gonna die, and they think George W. Bush.
Same with Ross Perot. Yeah. Can I finish? Can I finish? Yeah. My doggone hunt.
Yeah, and it was just grabbing onto that one, except for Trump, who actually does repeat those phrases over and over ad nauseum.
Mm-hmm. But he's fun to do. I know that I don't sound like him specifically, but I love doing it.
It's kind of like Schwarzenegger in that nobody can do an accurate voice of him.
One guy, Josh Thompson.
Josh Thompson is fake Arnold,
and he's the guy that used to call all the he would call or do interviews. Howard had him on, and he'd call in and go, "Oh, look, we have the governor." No, I'm not telling you. Take off the towel.
California.
Yeah. But he nailed it. I mean, not many people can. I can't do it.
Get to the chopper. Yeah.
Everybody has that impersonation, but nobody does it well.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's the same
thing. Because he has that German accent or Austrian accent that's so crazy. Yeah.
You know what's funny? I just heard the most random, you know, we should probably wrap it up, but I keep throwing it. But I heard it was on Reddit. Arnold wanted to dub himself in Terminator. And for Germany, for the German release of film, they would not let him.
Why?
Because he has an Austrian accent, which is essentially like a redneck accent to Germans.
Oh, wow.
So like the idea that a big, scary death machine sounded like Hillbilly Bob didn't fly. So the German execs were like, we got to dub
it. Hitler was a redneck.
Yeah, so I guess. Maybe.
he's Austrian.
Sarah Connor?
Yeah. MU Sarah Connor.
So, yeah, it's a fun fact. End on a fun Arnold fact.
Hey, everybody, follow us on Twitter @radio_labyrinth. We are on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Labyrinth. We also have a website called radiolabyrinthpodcast.com. You can find out all of our information there. You can find a link to buy tickets to our Relapse show next week. You can also find links to all of our social media and all that jazz. And you can find a link to our store where you can order Radio Labyrinth merchandise. Become a Radio Labyrinth patron by going to patreon.com/TimAndrews. Don't forget to listen to Mike TV. They have just wrapped up their...
That's where Steph is. She's out recording.
Yeah,
the,
she's recording tonight, Preacher. But they just wrapped up their dive into Legion, the most visually beautiful but confusing TV show in the history of television.
This final season was good, man. You got to go back and watch it.
Someday. Hosted by Mike TV herself, Lisa Krause, and Rockdale Tiger, a.k.a. Dean Poole. And now this week they're doing, like I said, Preacher, and that'll be up at some point, probably before this one. Anyway, did I leave anything out?
No, I don't think so.
We'll be back next week with Steph, me, and Jeff talking about TV. Lots of TV to talk about. The Terror. There's Lodge 49 is back.
Have you talked about The Preacher. Boys?
Yeah. Oh, fuck. We love The Boys.
The Boys is amazing. Ferta.
What's Ferta?
We're Ferta Boys.
Yeah. The Boys was great.
We love The Boys.
So smart. The answer to the Marvel sickness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yep.
Or the cure for cape shit, as I read somewhere. Thanks, Jeez. Mason.
Thank you so much, Tim.
Can you want people to follow you anywhere?
No, go away. No. Okay. You can go to Lamplight. Go to Facebook and just Lamplight Movie. And you'll find it there. So, yeah.
Cool.
Thank you so much.
We'll talk to you guys next week. Keep it canon.
Yeah, keep it canon.
Keep it canon.
Bye.
Hello, radios. It's me, Autumn Fisher. Just want to thank you for listening to Radio Labyrinth. We love you guys. We appreciate you. I want to give a special shout out to all of our Patreon donators. If you're not donating on Patreon, please go check us out at patreon.com/TimAndrews. We have some new things going on over there. We're sort of flipping some things around to get you guys motivated and keep you happy. So please go check that out. Also, I want to thank our new little baby Patreon donators, Ryan Wilson, Brian Smith, Jesse Rosinski, Chiru, Melissa Knowles. You guys are my newest little tiny little ducklings, and we really appreciate it. Give us all of you Patreon donators, direct message us. Sort of tell us what you'd like to see. Tell us things you'd like to change. Tell us things that you want. We'll do it. We want you here. So I want to go through the list and thank everybody who's donating. Walt Murray, Robert Calderman, Lauren Calderman, Robert Haley, Sam Wells, Alan Barker, Ruben Aguilar, Dustin Lawler, Mark Hierro, Chris Knight, Trent, Seth Ingram, Kit Beatty, yes, Ian Stull, Jeff Peterson, Andrew Mulazzi, Gwen Ketchum, Nicholas Frank, Adam Kelly, Sherry Doherty, Dean Poole, Chris Cosentino, Daniel Pitts, Leslie Haney, Brennan Price, John Sutherland, Andrew Harbin, Wayne Blair, Jeremy Turman, Kevin Stokes, Russ Weinberg, Chris Weiland, Leslie Norman, Lou Caniglio, Dan Carroll, Denise Reynolds, Mike
Day,
Jason Chappell, Brian Jackson, Emily Warren, Mark Weiland, Debbie McDonald, David C. Funk, Beth Van Elswick, Amber Gilpatrick, Colin Oman, Aaron Robert, Chad Shepard, Buck Monterey, Herb Lamb, Matt Carter, Eric Malmstrom, Garrett Kimball, Andrew Hopkins, Mike Hall, we're getting into the big daddies now, Al McMeekin, Jonathan Wilson, Sean Hall, Keith Tate, Mike Spittler, and finally, last but not least, not gone and not forgotten, Wendy Muller. Thank you, guys. We love you. We appreciate you. Keep it canon.